Welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, but my dark crystal name is Golberite.
My name is Joanna Robinson, but my dark crystal name is Mauve Heliopericlase.
Jesus.
And I'm Neil Miller, and my dark crystal name is Coral Nosekamite.
You guys are like full, members of some sort of society. I'm definitely like one of the swamp creatures.
Hey, you know what?
Where's Golberite over
swamp
there?
Creatures hey. Too.
That crystal's always cracking, making Skeksis no good.
Hire me, Jim Henson. All right, this week we are doing Dark Muppet movies in honor of the Happy Time Murders and other Muppet darkness, such as, you know, your dark crystals, your labyrinths, your meets the feebles. Meet the feebles. There's only one, so even pluralizing it isn't a good enough joke. We're going to be discussing that. First segment, general dark side of puppet cinema. Second segment, a little bit more specifically about the Happy Time Murders now in theaters. This week, if you are subscribed to patreon.com/stormspoilers at the Maester level or above, you'll be getting a bonus segment where we'll be talking about Ethan Hawke, who decided that Logan isn't actually a great movie this week. And then if you are part of the small council, then you know about the secret movie club. You know that tomorrow, Thursday, we are watching Labyrinth. And next month, I am happy to announce that we will be doing a movie club with a Predator movie. Because we're getting another Predator movie next month that we will then be doing a podcast about. That's all the business that's fit to print from my side. But of course, there's three sides to this coin. Joanna, do we have any reviews?
Oh, we sure do. And I am ready with them. I think I might do three whole reviews. First one's from Rickard Head, 5 stars. Can't wait for The Expanse on Amazon. Ah, geez, yo, The Expanse sure is great. Great podcast, very balanced, and the hosts complement each other's style and strengths. Some episodes aren't my topic of choice, but guess what, sports fans? You can just skip those. And then in parentheses, quit bitching where all the eyes are numbers, the number one. Most episodes are great. I love listening while walking the dog. Feels like I've got some good buddies on the walk with me. I was that guy on the Slack with a kneecap that looked like Pac-Man. So yeah, I fell down from Dagron. So that's one. Then we got another 5 stars. Great podcast from Rat Flail. Great podcast. Thank you, Dave, for the Red Rising recommendation. I was about to devour 3 books in about a week and a half. Don't worry, Joanna. I don't think you interrupt Dave and Neil as much as the Fitwork guys. Ooh, patches. Relic burn. P.S. I'm writing this as I'm waiting my flight to Dubrovnik. Pew, pew. All right. And then this last one comes from Binks Media. 5 stars. These guys get it. Just wanted to leave y'all a 5-star review. Took myself on a date last week to see Crazy Rich Asians. My initial review to friends was, this is the first rom-com that made me cry. I was so delighted to hear the guys admit it made them cry too. Neil, did you cry? I thought it was just Dave.
During what?
Crazy Rich Asians.
I got a little misty.
Oh, misty. Love it. Y'all are so progressive. I love the analysis you provide from that angle. I was also grateful for the little bit about Yellow from Coldplay. It annoyed me. I'm a hardcore Coldplay fan to see it in the movie, but the explanation of why it showed up made me love the movie more. Keep up the good work. So thank you to all of you. Those were all very nice things, but as Dave always says, you can say mean things to us if you want to, as long as you leave us a 5-star review.
Yeah.
Please do help rate and review us. It helps us get in front of other people's eyeballs as we wait for Game of Thrones to come back in April or May or some other time. It will come back.
My significant other kept asking me why I was playing Yellow this week, and it was because we talked about it on the podcast, and I kept being like, you know what? Crazy Rich Asians might have saved that song for me, because I was in a dark place with Yellow, and now I'm like, oh, that song, it's about love and family. And Mahjong playing.
Yeah.
Should I go rogue and talk and insist that we talk about the 2 seconds of new Game of Thrones footage we got this week?
Was that actually new?
Yeah. See, that's what I want you to debunk, because I don't think it is.
I have a theory. So we're going to talk about, so HBO released one of their, which, as they often do, this like sort of look ahead. Here's what all what's coming. And that's usually actually where we get our very first.
Sharp Objects Ascended. Don't cancel your subscription. We swear we have other things coming.
We have other things. Flight of the Conchords. Don't go away. Big Little Lies. True Detective. It's all coming.
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep. Veep. Come on. So this is often where we get our first Game of Thrones footage, usually like just a couple seconds. I think the one I remember most distinctly is like Cersei and her like partially grown out hair. And that's when we first like found out that she and like Tommen would be having a matching haircut that season. Anyway, there was a lot of old Game of Thrones footage in this look ahead, but there was a few seconds that may or may not be new. A few seconds that we have not seen before, which is Sansa and Jon hugging and Sansa looking kind of pissy and like weirdly over Jon's shoulder. So
at a giant dragon.
Well, so like a bunch of people immediately concluded and you know, they wouldn't be you know, foolish to do this, that, you know, maybe Sansa was mean mugging. If this is Jon's return to Winterfell, and Sansa is embracing him, maybe she's mean mugging some people that he's brought with him, whether that's Daenerys, or Tyrion. I don't know. I don't think she would mean mug Tyrion though, because, you know, he.
Her husband, her lawful husband.
Her lawful husband, Tyrion. And, yeah. So anyway, so that was a, you know, a lot of people spent a lot of time analyzing two seconds of footage. We can't blame them. We're all thirsty for Game of Thrones content. That being said,
she's looking at a dragon. That's pretty clear.
I have a theory.
That's my theory. And when it comes true, no one's going to live this down.
We'll remember Neil Stradamus. We always give you credit where we can. My theory is that this is actually footage, unused footage from the previous season, because we know that they filmed like a goodbye scene with Jon at Winterfell that Ghost was part of, and we know that it eventually got cut.
Ooh, from clever.
The thing. So I think this was actually
her being mugging Arya.
Jon saying, well, no, Arya wasn't there at that point. Jon
her just being sad.
Yeah, well, her just being generally pissy as she was around Jon. Like, she didn't want Jon to leave. So I feel like it was like Sansa and Jon hug each other goodbye in the courtyard of Winterfell last season, the beginning of last season, when she was like, don't leave, we need you. And he's like, yeah, I gotta see about a dragon queen though. Bye. So that's my theory. I'll just say this. I feel very confident that wherever Game of Thrones and HBO can throw us off the scent, they will try to throw us off the scent. And so I would not put it past them to include cut footage, in this trailer, or it could be new footage, but that's my theory, that it's cut old footage.
Cut older footage or dragon.
I like cut older footage, but also I think it's pretty safe bet that Sansa and Jon will be hugging this season, so we'll probably never know.
Yeah, but we'll be we will know, because
Joanna will be able to make a gif.
We will, like, yeah, for right. <Let us know. laughs> I was trying to like look at the costumes and the hairstyle, and like I'm like, this could have been last season. So
the costuming is tough because Kit Harington's costume pretty much didn't change except for that one episode that he was north of the wall.
It's true, but I think this last season was the one where he like started really rocking that like half ponytail. So I don't know. We'll see. No, I guess he did that Battle of the Bastards. Anyway. Those are my Game of Thrones footage thoughts. I also have a release date thought. You know, Huffington Post released this interview with the visual effects. Is it John Bauer or something Bauer? Last name B-A.
Joe Bauer.
Joe Bauer, thank you. Yeah. Joe Bauer of like white polar bear fame. And Joe Bauer is the one who had that like quote for a really long time where he's like, we got a special effect that I can't wait for you guys. I can't wait. And
Joe Bauer's middle name is anticlimactic.
Joe teasing us about Lady Stoneheart Bauer. Anyway, so he gave an interview to the Huffington Post where he was talking about how he'll be working on Game of Thrones through May of next year. And Huffington Post extrapolated from that they believe that Game of Thrones then won't start until at least May of next year. But what's true about Game of Thrones and a lot of other shows is that visual effects people work on the show even after it has premiered. You know, so like Joe Bauer could be working on the finale, as, you know, the show is premiering. I still think, James Hibbard of Entertainment Weekly. Like, if anyone in the media knows when Game of Thrones is premiering next year already, it's James Hibbard, right? Because HBO will want to let him know what, like, when his cover story for Entertainment Weekly should drop next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Hibbard, I don't know if you saw this, but Winter is Coming, the Game of Thrones fan site, posted a thing on Twitter where they were like, you know, for the Emmy qualification rules next year, the cutoff date is May 31st. So, you know, in order for Thrones to have, like, all of their episodes in consideration, they would have to have it air before May 31st. And they, like, tagged James Hibbard in this. And Hibbard was like, Hibbard responded, then I believe deleted, you know, he was like, hypothetically speaking, if you were HBO and this is your, like, last season to get Emmys for Game of Thrones, wouldn't you want all of the episodes to air before the cutoff for the Emmys, hypothetically speaking, especially if there are only six? And so I'm going to go with this is premiering mid-April.
So it's obviously mid-April.
Mid-April is what I'm saying. I can do the math. Mid-April is when I believe Game of Thrones.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, it's, you know, it's why you would release a Paul Thomas Anderson movie on Christmas Day, because it's right at the end of the, you know, Oscar consideration window, and right, you know, that's why movies get dumped at the end of the year that want to try and win Oscars.
Right.
And that's why all future Star Wars movies will do it at the end of the year too, so that they could win the popular Oscar award.
April, the Sundays in April 2019 are the 7th, the 14th, and the 21st. So close to 420 final season.
Oh, man.
I know. That's only important in certain states, but you'd be surprised. Excellent. Neil, now that we've cleared some Game of Thrones stuff, what is your segment called?
Oh, Dave, you know it's called Storm Chasing.
Pew! Pew, 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 pew.
Okay, so I'm going to go first this week, because I haven't gone first in a little while. My storm that I chased down and solved as a mystery is American Vandal Season 2. The embargo will be up on what I'm about to say by the time you listen to this, but I'm not sure when American Vandal is coming back. I'll find out. But anyway, I watched, I think, all of it. I'm pretty sure I watched all of it. Definitely watched
it. Wait. This is like American Vandal, for people who don't know. This is a faux documentary,
yes,
true crime series. How would you know if you didn't watch all of it?
Well,
is there something I don't know about this series besides that there's a villain named the Turd Burglar that causes a mass pooping incident? That's what, yes, we know from the trailer.
How high were you when you were watching this? That's the missing.
Here's
element of
this. I guess this is all you really need to know about American Vandal Season 2. It is about poop, and poop is funny, as it turns out. The two kids that starred in the first season, and they solved the, you know, the who drew the dicks mystery. It's just as excellent as the first one. In fact, I think I had forgotten how funny American Vandal Season 1 was. And then as I was watching Season 2, I was like, oh.
I think you mean this show's Sam really Eklund good. And Peter Maldonado.
Sam Eklund, Peter Maldonado. It's a real strong Peter month.
I love Peter.
For Netflix. Peter Kavinsky.
Sure.
Peter Maldonado. Oh, Season yeah. 2 is actually September 14th. The embargo lifts this week. So I'm just giving you cursory thoughts that I watched. I'm 99% sure I watched all of it, and it's great.
I haven't seen it yet. I've heard from someone who I know loved American Vandal Season 1 that, yes, it's like cruder than Season 1 because it's poop.
It's
still very funny.
So, like, the first season was about drawing dicks.
Yeah.
The second season is about actual poop.
Yeah.
So there is some actual poop on your screen at certain points throughout the show.
I was, I was really worried when I saw the trailer. I was actually really worried because I love season one. They kept the fact that it was about poop a secret until they dropped the trailer last week. And so, you know, we didn't have like a lot of time to worry about like how much poop was going to be in season two. But I was worried when I saw the trailer. But then someone I know watched, definitely watched the whole thing. Liked it as much as they liked season. Well, maybe not quite as much, but still very, very good season one. I think the challenge, as far as I can tell, with American Vandal is a lot of what season one was about, the popularity of it, was like the surprise of how good this show was, you know? You're right. Like, this true crime mockumentary about doing the dicks is actually good? Like, so how do you then land a second season when expectations are now actually like set, won a Peabody Award for fuck's sake. So, you know, like where do you go from there? So,
yeah, anyway. What's great is that, season two sort of starts so strong. Like by the end of the first episode, you're like, oh yeah, this feels right. This feels right. And the poop thing is actually very funny. So it's one of those things where if you're like on the fence about whether you're going to watch a second season, which I don't know why you would be after season one, you'll know after the first episode. So yeah, so that's mine. Joanna, what is your storm of choice this week?
Well, so I missed the episode where you were stumping for the Canadian series Letterkenny.
Theo and I.
Both you and Theo were stumping, yeah. And then it sort of like bled into the next weekend, and there was talk of it on our Patreon Slack. And then my roommate and her lovely gentleman friend watched it, and like the show is so quotable that like I grew intolerant of living in a household where I didn't get the jokes of like that were constantly being quoted around me. So I decided to watch it. The first two seasons, as I'm sure you already said in the previous episode, are on Hulu. I chewed right through it. It was delightful. And it was so funny because I was talking to an ex-boyfriend of mine, and he was like really surprised I like it. He's like, you never like those like ensemble people are assholes shows, like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, stuff like that. I was like, I don't see this as comparable at all to that. Like, first of all,
well, because they're not assholes.
I don't think they're assholes. Like, you know, they're
Squirrely Dan is at a women's studies class at least once a week. That guy is cool.
I will say this: if you watch it, it starts with a little more gay panic than I enjoy generally. And then it course corrects for that in a very like clever way. I will also say I would love it if there were a woman on this show that wasn't like a nubile young half-dressed woman. There's no one except for like a horned up bartender, and she is like my least favorite character on the show. So like you know, a different kind of woman on the show would be fair. Some nice bit of variety. But other than that, great show. Really enjoy it. The other thing, I can't talk too much about it because there is still an embargo up on it, but I have seen all 10 episodes of Cary Fukunaga's Maniac, and I am so enamored of it that I was alluding to this on our Slack as well, but like, I'll just say that I like it a lot. I won't talk about it. I won't talk about any plot points. This is the Emma Stone, Jonah Hill, based on a Norwegian, I believe, television show about a guy who's in a coma, I think, and you sort of slip into his fantasy world. This is a little different. It's I'm just giving plot points, no spoilers. Pharmaceutical trial. Emma Stone and Jonah Hill are both participating in, and you slip inside both of their heads. And it's very Michel Gondry. It's very in a good way. It's a little bit of Inception. It's a little bit of Legion, but without any of the like super challenging incomprehensibility of Legion. It's everything is very clear. And it also co-stars Sally Field, Justin Theroux, Gabriel Byrne, a bunch of other people. It's incredible. I really, 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 really liked it. So I'm excited to talk to you guys all about that. So much so that I've made Neil and Dave do a whole episode about it next month. Yay!
Yay!
So. Yay!
Dave?
Mine is going to exercise your Criterion collection. Sometimes when I'm doing lots of work that involves watching things render or making sure things are perfectly round, you know, work that doesn't necessarily involve my critical thinking, I like to have something playing in the background. Things that always work are like old Looney Tunes and black and white movies. Usually silent films. This time I went on Filmstruck and was going through my watch list and came across a Fritz Lang movie I didn't know that... Well, I knew that I hadn't seen, but hadn't gotten around to seeing. It's called The Testament of Dr. Mabuse. It's a 1933 German crime film. It is not silent. It is the Mabuse. There's three Fritz Lang Mabuse films. The first one is silent and like 4 hours long and comes in two parts. Maybe I'll get to that if I decide to follow Mabuse down a like rabbit hole, but probably not. This one's the more famous one to the 1960s sequel, The Thousand Eyes of Dr. Mabuse, which kicked off another Mabuse series. The important thing is this movie's really creepy. 1933, there's a criminal mastermind hypnosis character who's kind of like Hannibal Lecter. He's been captured previous to the movie starting. He's seemingly crazy, sitting in his cell, scribbling all these things that are barely intelligible. Meanwhile, there's a crime spree going on in Germany, and these two things are connected with a minor supernatural bent and a ton of German expressionism filmmaking that still works surprisingly well because Fritz Lang's a genius. So it's old. It's part of the Criterion Collection, which means if you have like a Filmstruck account, it'll be there. But otherwise, I think it worth a purchase if you're into these black and white German films, because it is absolutely amazing that this crime plot holds up, especially the week where I saw a noir riff done by puppets that didn't have nearly as much attention paid to the plot. So yeah, the Last Testament or The Testament of Dr. Mabuse, depending on where you're seeing the translation. It's about 2 hours long. It's pretty great.
Cool. All right, sweet. We've successfully chased down all of the relevant storms.
Pew!
That means it's time for Dark Puppets. I'm unsure how to necessarily start this. I mean, Dark Pups and Mups. The Muppet movie, I think, became like a huge part of my childhood by the basis of there being, I don't know, Muppet Show reruns on, that then that must have led me to the movie through my parents. But soon after came, for me at least, The Dark Crystal, which would have been released in 82, so I definitely was raised with this on home video at some point in my life. And that sort of locked into my head that Muppets didn't necessarily need to be comedy, which I think puts us in the generation that has never lived with a 100% comedy puppet, but rather a versatile idea of what a Muppet could be, especially with your Dark Crystals, your Labyrinths, your, I still count the New Line Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles because it involves so much puppetry, probably more puppetry than actual acting if you go back and look at it. And this weekend's the Happy Time Murders. But we're going to put the Happy Time Murders for the side, and I want to ask a question that I've been dying to ask, and this is the episode for it. Joanna, what did you think about the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie?
I just watched this, like, 2 weeks ago. I'm in the sort of, I don't know what you would call it, like a pen pal sort of movie club with someone where each week one of us picks like a favorite movie that the other person likely hasn't seen to watch. And that person picked Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I had never seen. And, I can see why, you know, I'm the right age for it. I would have been the right age. I just didn't see it at the right time. And I can see why if I had seen it as a kid, I would have been like super obsessed with it. There's a weird nostalgia to it that like, even though I didn't see it, I feel a nostalgia because like all the product placement is like the right product placement of my childhood. And so, you know, there's, I don't know, am I supposed to be talking about the puppetry specifically? I will say it's very racist towards Californians. We don't, talk like that, bro. But, no, I'm just kidding. I like the puppetry on the, or the suits on the turtles look really great. Splinter's another matter altogether. That's some not great stuff, I think. But, there is one last thing I'll say about sort of special effects and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is like the montage of them becoming Mutant Ninja Turtles, where you like see it start with like actual little turtles in like grainy flashback footage is pretty amazing. Oh, and Elias Koteas is great in everything he's ever done ever. So there you go.
Yes.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That was the like culmination of the research the Jim Henson Company started during season 2 of The Muppet Show for what they were calling the Fantasy Project, which became Dark Crystal, which was basically the idea, how do we take these comedic characters and sort of apply them to a more serious world? And even though I think they started that like the second season of The Muppet Show's production, it wasn't until like the fifth season of The Muppet Show is actually shooting that I think Dark Crystal ended up being a film. Neil,
mm-hmm.
You attempted to watch Dark Crystal, but apparently that didn't work out for you.
It's funny, the last couple times that I've tried to watch not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that one forever, but like the last couple times I've tried to watch Labyrinth and the last couple times that I've tried to watch Dark Crystal, for some reason, and this doesn't happen with hardly any other movies, those movies just straight up put me to sleep.
Interesting.
They're very good. They're both delightful and weird, and I love the texture that they have. But for some reason, they make me fall asleep. So I did most of the homework in that I did go see The Habitat Murders, which we'll talk about later. And I did... I haven't watched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in a while. I really got to go back to that one. That one's a good one. But I was thinking this, I was thinking about like the sort of darkness or the sort of adult themes that Jim Henson explored. And I'm almost not convinced that it's limited to the movies we're talking about. Like there is sort of, like when you look back at like 1979's The Muppet Movie, there's adult themes in that. Like it feels to me like Jim Henson was almost doing Toy Story long before Pixar ever made Toy Story, because it's like these essentially toy, like what you would have as like a stuffed animal, are taking on sort of lives of adults in and around, especially in and around worlds of children, but also in the Muppet Movie Doc Hopper tries to eat Kermit.
Yeah.
So that's dark. But I was actually, it's funny, when I was writing out the notes for this, I also added the Christmas classic, the Jug Band one. Why am I forgetting the name of this movie?
Oh, yeah, your Jug Band.
Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
There we go.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before, being like, it's straight up like about classism and poverty. And so I think that Jim Henson, he just sort of had that. He had that thoughtfulness about like the world.
Yeah.
And we see that. And there's a lot of very adult stuff in sort of all of his movies. But, you know, obviously Dark Crystal, Labyrinth are, you know, a little bit different, but I do think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is one that sort of is on both sides, where it is a thing that I remember loving as a child, and then when you watch it as an adult, there's a lot of mysticism in it, there's a lot of you know, sort of deep ideas about like, you know, warrior lifestyle. It's really interesting to sort of dissect it, as if you think about sort of Jim Henson's larger ideas that he brought to his work.
I mean, it's interesting, but I wouldn't call Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles like a dark puppet film.
No,
like, only if we're like, talking lighting.
Yeah,
like Dark Crystal, which was a super important, like even more than Labyrinth, a super important movie to me growing up. We had like we watched it a lot. My dad used to scare us by doing a Skeksy impression. So he would go like, Skeksis, and it would scare the shit out of us. Dark Crystal starts with a fucking Gelfling getting lobotomized, basically. Like, it's like a cute little, if you've never seen Dark Crystal, there are these cute little puppety muppety Gelfling figures that are basically elves. And then there's these Skeksis, which are these vulture creatures. And then there's like these, the third creature.
The Mystics.
Yeah, the Mystics. We had an audiobook. We had the Dark Crystal audiobook. The Dark Crystal isn't a book. So what it basically was just the audio of the movie with like some narration put over it that I listened to over and over and over again. So like, you know, when Kira or whatever, the little Gelfling girl, she goes like, cause she can fly and our hero can't. And she goes, of course not. You know, you're a boy. Like all this stuff. Like it's like one of those things, like when you're a kid and your brain is spongy and you listen to something over and over and over again, that's what the Dark Crystal is to me. It's, you know, of the time of an era of 80s high fantasy that, you know, where all these like 60s kids who grew up reading Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and they're like trying to make legend and all these other like 80s high fantasy great shit, just distinctly my shit. And that's how I feel about the Dark Crystal, which ultimately has a really, really good message about like the way in which, you know, good and evil isn't as binary as you think and all this other stuff. But it's a very imaginative, wholly realized world. And that plus Labyrinth, which we will watch, which has the added benefit of having David Bowie's crotch in it, like, it makes you really wish that Jim Henson had more time to give us, like, more of these very imaginative and wholly creative, fantasy worlds. Dave, was the Dark Crystal important to you growing up?
Yes, definitely. And then I was sad that eventually the power of the Dark Crystal, didn't materialize. That's the sequel. It eventually became a comic book last year, but I'm excited because Joanna's right that it's the world building that makes Dark Crystal interesting, not so much the story. Although it's hard for me to say because also like Joanna, I was like mildly traumatized by some things in the Dark Crystal. So it's like my mind in the movie is like all lobotomy. And then they strip that one Skeksis like of his rank. And
ooh,
then
yeah,
the one-eyed witch, and then like Crystal Showdown, and like I know there's other stuff that happens in between there with her podlings or whatever, but it's much like I think for early watch throughs of Raiders of the Lost Ark, it distilled itself to like these nightmare moments that even when the movie wasn't on, would stick with me. So
ooh,
good news to people.
See, I would go with an Indiana Jones movie, but it's more it traumatized me in more of a Temple of Doom way.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ali Ma.
Yeah.
There's going to be a prequel series, though, guys, with Louis Leterrier directing 10 episodes of a Netflix prequel series called The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, which is good because that's the world I want to see. Although the power of the Dark Crystal seemed interesting, what's the point when the, you know, two races have been reunited into the perfect race? They can resurrect people.
Spoiler.
I want to see spoiler for the Dark Crystal. I want to see the world before
more
for
Skeksis.
Sure. More Skeksis.
Yeah. There's a, first of all, let's discuss, I'm like cautiously optimistic about the Dark Crystal thing because like the Netflix show, because I'm always, as we talked last week in our bonus episode, Rebootapalooza, like, you know, I'm always like a little worried. I'm like, the Dark Crystal is a perfect thing. Do we need to touch it? That being said, and also the subtitle Age of Resistance is a dumbass Transformers subtitle. So I don't like that at all. Transformers Age of Resistance, you know, it's a thing. All right. So just call it Dark Crystal 2. I don't know. Like what happens?
It's a prequel.
I don't care. Dark Crystal, the beginning. Whatever. Anyway.
We'll just call it Dark Crystal. Who cares?
That being said, if you go watch like the quote unquote trailer, which isn't really a trailer, there's a lot of like, it's Netflix has like a trailer for Dark Crystal Age of Resistance up from like May of last year. It's a footage of Jim Henson talking about how Dark Crystal was the hardest thing he ever made and all this stuff like that. But then there is some footage of like the creature shop, the puppet shop, and like them putting like new Gelflings together and new Skeksis together and some of the sketches and stuff like that. And it's, it looks really cool. So if, you know, I think they're really dedicated to keeping the aesthetic of the first film. And if they want to like, you know, come up with a good story that's worth what 10 episodes or whatever the shit they're going to do, then like I, you know, it's another arrow through my heart, Netflix. How can I resist you?
Yeah,
there you go.
So in between Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Labyrinth, we have a non-Henson but very adult Muppet movie that I guess it keeps its place in the pantheon, which is Meet the Feebles. Did anybody revisit Meet the Feebles this week?
I watched it for the first time.
Oh, you watched it for the first time. Mm-hmm. Okay. When I first saw it, I was, what, a 14-year-old boy? And enjoyed it. I am guessing now just by the clips I could find online and by what I remember of the movie, there might be slight more uncomfortable moments as a viewer in Meet the Feebles. What did you think as a current era viewer of Peter Jackson and Peter Jackson's puppet movie? Vulgar puppet movie.
Here's what I love. One of my friends in high school, Charlie Price, his family's from New Zealand, and so like he was always stumping this New Zealand stuff for us before, you know, so like I think he's the reason why I got on board with like Hercules and Xena super early, all the Bruce Campbell stuff super, all the Sam Raimi stuff super early, and then the Peter Jackson stuff. He made us watch Dead Alive a lot. He was always trying to get us to watch Meet the Feebles, and we somehow always shot Meet the Feebles down. So Meet the Feebles is, like, since I was a teenager, has been this, like, not even Charlie Price could get us to watch Meet the Feebles sort of thing. And so, but I knew exactly what it was. Like, it's not like I went in expecting for it to be something else. And as, like, a piece of sort of an anthropological item of, like, okay, this guy eventually made Lord of the Rings, which I think is one of the best trilogy of films of all time. This guy made Beautiful Creatures. Like, so where is the early, early Peter Jackson in all this? And so from, you know, knowing that there was going to be a lot of, like, dark Muppet bodily fluids. I mean, it's disgusting. It's a disgusting film. But, like, I knew that. So, like, it's not like I could be offended or shocked. I was just like, that's what this is. And so then you sort of start to look for the beginning, the origins. He co-wrote this with Fran Walsh, his wife and like future writing partner on all of his projects. So I don't know, this like sixth sense of humor. It's sometimes just really fun to see someone's like really raw, early, frankly immature filmmaking before they become a mature filmmaker. I mean, the same is true, I would say, of Sam Raimi. Like if you watch early Sam Raimi, it's like fun to think about like, oh, that guy then became the Spider-Man guy, you know, like all of that. So I don't know. I was happy to have watched that instead of Happy Time Murders. I think there's like more, possibly more value in watching this than watching Happy Time Murders. So yeah, Meet the Feebles. Go ahead, watch it. Don't be like shocked by what you see, because everything
it's super gross.
Is disgusting will happen. So there you go.
Is it available to like digitally stream or rent anywhere? Because I had a difficult time finding it for the 5 minutes I thought about rewatching the whole thing.
No, I actually had a friend who had it on DVD, so that's how I got it, but I don't know otherwise.
There's a shitty version on YouTube, but I try not to if I don't have to.
Oh, it's available on Tubi TV.
Ooh, nice.
For free.
Ooh, even better. All right, maybe Meet the Feebles is worth it to see that 1989 is the year that America was ready for dirty puppets.
I don't know about America. This, like, got a super limited release. I think it debuted in, like, Norway or Germany or some, you know, like, it was very underground. And then I think Dead Alive, which he made after, is sort of what actually got him noticed. And then I think people started watching Meet the Feebles because of Dead Alive and then because of Beautiful Creatures, Beautiful Critters, and then... Heavenly Creatures. I keep calling it the wrong thing.
Well, just, it's like, there's this interesting period in puppet cinema pre-CGI that Meet the Feebles falls like right in the middle of, where I think with all puppet movies, if you're going to do like especially like a Henson movie, they're trying to push the boundaries of, there's some sort of like filmmaking trick in it. Meet the Feebles is remarkable because it's an independent movie that's cast entirely by puppets, and they made it for like a super low budget and in like a matter of weeks. So that sort of is like its thing. But when Henson does a movie, it's like it's a whole production a la Dark Crystal, or there's, you know, bike riding like the Great Muppet Caper. They're always trying to push the way that the Muppets are used in like in a certain way. And I'm wondering if Meet the Feebles is like the pinnacle of how wide a Muppet can be thematically.
What's interesting is that I think when Jim Henson, I mean, we'll talk about good old Brian Henson in a second, but when Jim Henson decided to go dark with his Muppets, like, when you talk about Dark Crystal and, like, the Gelfling lobotomy and all of that sort of stuff, like, that's mature content, but it's not, like, anything approaching, like, immature content, you know? And then same thing with The Labyrinth, which we're going to watch in the Slack, so we're not going to talk about it too much, I guess, but, like, the reason why Labyrinth feels so mature is it is so sexy, and it is so sexy because David Bowie is just allowed to be super sexy. And so Jim Henson put, like, it's very much like a Little Red Riding Hood, like the dangers of the big bad wolf. Like, you can put that in a fairy tale, but it is, like, about mature sexuality. And so that's what the Labyrinth is, that's what Labyrinth is actually all about. He just happened to combine that with some great puppetry. So you've got puppetry, and then you've got this, like, very mature sexual story that doesn't read that way if you're a kid, you know what I mean? So that's why I would include the Labyrinth in a dark thing. But using puppets for juvenile, gross out, immature humor, that's something Peter Jackson did. That's something I believe the Happy Time Murders does. That's something that Team America World Police did. You know, like, there are other examples of that. That is just sort of, like, not as interesting to me. It's still interesting, but not entirely interesting to me, because you're like, what Henson, I think, was trying to do was trying to bring puppet storytelling to adult sensibility. And what this is doing is pitching straight down to juvenile humor, which is not, you know, there's something terribly, terribly wrong with that on its face, but it's like, it's not expanding, like, the idea of Muppetry and what it can do. Right? I don't know. Was that a ramble?
I mean, in theory, what I want to move towards and what I'll say and then immediately throw it a break so nobody can prove me wrong until after they've heard us read some names is that I feel like Meet the Feebles, Team America, Happy Time Murders, Meet the Feebles and Team America are actually showing me puppets doing things I haven't seen before, even if it is crude, like, if that's what they have to reach for. I'm not sure the Happy Time Murder is. Let's find out after this break. And we're here for the weekly reading of Small Council Names. If you subscribe at patreon.com/scumroomspoilers at the Small Council level or above, we get to thank you on air. We're doing that now. I'm going to start first. I want to thank Rachel Aluli, Randy Blash, Randy Webb, Rebels Podcast, which we're going to assume is a name, Rick Russell, Robert D. Repass, Rose Stangline. You know what, guys? I can't read this blue very well. This is not a good idea for me. Ruby Durham, Russell Griffin, Ryan M., Ryan Altwood, Ryan Silverstein, Sam Cohen, Sam Adolfo, and Samba Uteba. Shout out to all the Sams, though.
That was a noble effort. I will just say that I believe it's Ryan Allwood, but other than that...
What did I even say? I don't even remember.
Altwood?
Ryan Allwood, I apologize, but hopefully your name's Ryan T. Allwood, because it's right there.
Then your nickname would be Tallwood.
Ooh.
Anyway, picking up, I have shout-outs for Sarah Carmichael, Sarah Ellis, Sarah Collins, Sean... Just Sean. Sean Cosme. Seosam Odelay?
I mean, no, because it's Gaelic, but I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, cool. I tried.
Nope.
Yeah, no.
Have you seen how Saoirse Ronan and Donald Gleeson spell their name? You know that we have no shot in hell.
It's probably going to just be like Sam. Like, that's
Sam,
just...
Yeah, yeah.
Sam O'Dolly, yeah.
Charlene Love, Stacy Winkleplek, Stacy Taxon, Stephanie Deal, Stephanie Hoffman, Stephen Weathers, Stephen Boyd, Summer McCusker, and Sverrir Sigfusson. Yeah, that's close enough.
I think you got a tough assignment there. All right. I'm going to thank Tanya Andren Shrum, Tom Witham, Tommy Fitzgerald, Cyclone Gatling, Vanessa Marshall, Vanessa Christensen, Victoria Stout, Wade McFarlane, Warpstone, Whimsy Riot, that's Brittany Whimsy Riot, I'm pretty sure, Will Wallace, Eve Fontelay, Zach E., Zachary Silverman, JC Quinn, the lovely AJ Cabbage, Taylor Hughes, T. Ledoux, Alyssa Love, Savio Nguyen,
Win.
George.
I actually know that one because I had a teacher with that last name.
I've Win? Heard it both ways.
No, fine. Fine.
Nguyen. Savio Nguyen. I will take a correction if I'm wrong. Georgia O'Brien, Timothy Click.
So guys,
thank you all so much.
Those are our small council members. That was the month of August. If you want to get in, go to patreon.com/stormspoilers. Sign up small council level or above. Put in your name or change your name if you didn't like what we did to your name this month. And next month, we're going to do it all again. Thank you guys so much for donating. You make the show possible. And we're back to talk about more obscene puppets. This weekend, Neil and I both saw The Happy Time Murders. It is a Henson Son movie. It is based on a Todd Berger Blacklist script from, I think, like, what, 2010, 2011? This thing's been floating around, slowly getting made for years. The male, or not the male lead, the human lead in this movie has changed many times. By the time it comes out, it's Melissa McCarthy, and I feel like some of the screenplay's been slightly tweaked to a particular brand of physical comedy, which I definitely enjoyed. Happy Time Murders has a interesting premise, which is there is a show called the Happy Time Group Pack. What was the name, Neil?
Happy Time Gang?
Gang. It was the first show to normalize puppets as like, it was like the Cosby Show of this puppet universe that, sometimes uses puppets as a race metaphor. And now, years later, as the show is about to go into reruns and the puppet cast stands to make a lot of money, someone starts killing off all the members of the Happy Time Gang. The brother of one of the Happy Time Gang actors was also the first puppet cop. But since when the movie starts, he has quit to become a PI, and whatever he did was so bad that there are no longer any more puppet cops allowed all across America. They've made a law. Together with still Detective Melissa McCarthy, our puppet hero has to solve who's killing all the Happy Time Gang. Neil, how good is Elizabeth Banks's agent in the fact that she's not in any of the advertising for this movie?
Well, you know, I mean, maybe they decided to distance themselves when they realized that the movie wasn't going to be very good. But yes, Elizabeth Banks is in this movie. Maya Rudolph is in this movie. She's delightful, as always. And I also sort of liked Melissa McCarthy. This one's a tough one because it's fine, I guess. There's just not a lot there. There's just not a lot of... you know, it's not quotable. It's not particularly memorable. There's one really cool moment sort of early in the film where Melissa McCarthy does drugs and then beats up a room full of puppets, which on a physical level is actually very funny. Beyond that, I don't know. I mean, it's clear that they're going for sort of this noir-ish detective story where you know, it's unraveling this mystery, but he's also, you know, wrapped up in this. And there's, what's interesting is about like the anti-puppet sentiment that they draw isn't necessarily a one for one for like race relations in America now.
Right.
It's more of a one for one for like how the 1960s would have gone if like the civil rights movement got like snuffed out. So
like, what it felt like for me was, the world of Who Framed Roger Rabbit never changed, and now we're just discriminating against puppets.
Right. Yeah. So it's like puppets are, they're not just like an other. They're like don't have rights and stuff. So that's weird. It's a weird world they built, which you know, builds on this whole idea that, you know, puppets next to humans is an inherently interesting thing, which I think that might be true, but you really need a little bit more to the story, and I just didn't feel it.
Yep. I'm with you in that it needed to be more. I feel like the first 10 or 15 minutes of this movie are setting up a movie that I'd really like to see. And then we get into the porno shop and the movie decides it's going to really quickly plant its flag in a certain type of humor, that they then drag that sort of like lowbrow humor through a fairly sophisticated noir plot. That then, you know, defangs the noir plot for being at all interesting. There's a whole bunch of weird asides, including the, like, copious silly string jizz gag that made all the trailers. And then the ending, by the time we get to the ending, I was just very bored. But it's like, there wasn't enough moment-to-moment to keep this movie interesting. It's like the first time you see a puppet's head explode because it's been shot with a shotgun and it's a whole bunch of fluff. Great. Hilarious. The dog's ripping a puppet apart. Also hilarious because that's like a horrific way to die. But then it doesn't really advance past that. It decides to turn back and become more noir when really it needs to lead into being more puppet. And because of that, it feels very choppy. So like, Neil was referencing there's like this drug connection where puppets can get high with through sugar, even though we do see them, I think, drink at some point. So I'm kind of unclear.
Yeah, but
like,
I think, aren't they drinking like maple syrup?
Is the main detective also drinking maple syrup in his drawer?
Maybe.
Okay.
He's
either
drinking
way,
some kind of brown liquid.
Right. And so the idea is that Melissa McCarthy's liver was replaced with a puppet liver. And so now she also gets high on sugar, and
right? She like can take like pure glucose,
yeah,
up her nose, and it gets her high.
Which is like, it's a great for that one scene that you referenced, where she's, you know, they're in the middle of like a drug deal, and she has to prove herself. She ends up being the shit out of a whole bunch of puppets, but then they try to keep it around like a thread we should care about, like emotionally. Like she's been driven to like sugar addiction because of the trauma of her past on the police force. And I'm like, what are you doing, movie? That the sugar thing was a joke. Like, discard it. Get rid of it.
Right. Yeah. There's a scene later in the movie that like brings it all back to how much of a train wreck she is. So I don't know. It also doesn't make sense. I think, you know, it's interesting now that we've talked in the last segment, the point of that Joanna made about Dark Crystal and Labyrinth and the amount of care that went into sort of the worlds that they were building with those movies. They were adults. That's one of the things to me that makes them more serious adult movies, because it's clear that the people building that world really, you know, take a lot of care to create something completely unique. And as much as the Happy Time Murders looks like it was probably fun to make, I don't know if that same level of care is there. And so, yeah, it really is just sort of a juvenile movie. And you always hope when puppets are involved that you're gonna, that magic is gonna come back. You know, that Kermit the Frog, you know, sitting on the lily pad singing the rainbow song, right?
Yeah.
Songs about rainbows. You want that magic, or, you know, you want, you know, something similar to the final sort of face off in Dark Crystal. Like, you want something really cool that you'll remember and that you take with you. And because Muppets are, you know, special to the people that grew up with them and others. And there's literally nothing in this movie that is even approaching relatively memorable. I mean, I think the one that's memorable is the scene in the trailer where he's ejaculating silly string that goes on way too long. And so, like, if that's your most iconic moment, this is, it's really not a great movie.
Yeah. Although I will say, to loop back, Maya Rudolph is giving 110% to this shitty puppet movie in every scene that she's in.
Oh, yeah.
Which, like, kind of makes me want to see, I don't know, like, the story world of the beginning is very interesting, and the idea that, like, we're right on the edge of, like the second class citizen becoming a first class citizen is really interesting. But you're right, Neil, in the sense that the movie doesn't feel like that world building was carried through all of it. Like, there's only one scene, I think, where Melissa McCarthy's in a bathroom at a puppet-only place, and you realize the bathroom's too small for her, and it's like, of course it would be. But, like, that's never called out as a joke, and it's never done again. We're never in puppet-only environments, necessarily. So it feels like half world building, where the joke ends with, wouldn't it be funny if you saw puppets do blank? And so many of those things depend on you having not seen Meet the Feebles when you were a 14-year-old boy.
Well, and it just, I mean, and I don't mean this as a slight to Brian Henson. I'm sure he's a very nice person. It just feels lazy. Like, the whole thing feels kind of lazy.
Yeah.
And that's not what I expect. I mean, I have high expectations of Muppet cinema, but you can't be lazy.
They have some really good puppet work here that transitions between full CGI puppets and full body puppets that are being manipulated by like two or three guys in green suits. But that's not enough to make a startling looking puppet movie. There's not even like a sequence.
It's super impressive, like when they're showing you the behind the scenes stuff in the end.
Then you notice. Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, oh, that is kind of cool how they did that. But it's different because, you know, like Leica does that with all their movies. They show like a stop motion artist doing a scene in the credits. And it's always at the end of a movie where it's like, oh, I really did want to know more. This one, it's almost like the redeeming quality is like, oh, look at how many people worked really hard on this movie that I will otherwise never think of again.
That's a good point. Basically, every Jim Henson movie, I've wanted to see a behind-the-scenes documentary of, because it does something, and I'm like, oh, that's a cool technique. I want to see how that is. There's not even a sequence in this movie that attempts to do that, I don't think. It's very visually bland. I know that's because of the restrictions of how you could shoot these Muppets, but if there's not something new in a Muppet movie, I really feel like you're straining for a reason to have a Muppet movie. As, you know, Jason Segel and company learned by barely eking one by before that sequel. Neil, is there anything I left out of the Happy Time Murders besides the ending?
No, I mean, it's pretty dumb. I'll be honest. I hate to just straight up shit on a movie. And I don't feel like I wasted my time seeing it, but yeah, I got nothing for it now that I've seen it.
It's definitely not a go to the theaters movie, but it is no Slender Man, the worst movie of the year so far. That's where it falls on our little critical barometer. Joanna, did we convince you to go see the Happy Time Murders?
I'm sorry, I was taking a nap. No, I was listening. You've convinced me that I made the right decision to skip that part of the homework this week. But I watched Meet the Feebles, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is like Meet the Feebles, but for some reason they decided to make it in 2018.
Yeah.
We haven't evolved since then, so.
I will just say, I remember watching the trailer and being like, oh, this could be fun, and then it, like, the last part of the trailer is just him, like, jizzing Silly String forever. Like, when he first jizzed Silly String, I was like, this is funny, and then it goes on forever, and I was like, oh, they don't know how to pace this. Okay, never mind, I don't want to. So, yeah. There you go.
Oh, yeah, happy tough one. Murders. Well, on the off-cast...
But, if they want to make a sequel where it's just the detective and Maya Rudolph hanging out, I'm in for it.
Yes.
Get her back. Let's do a sequel.
Also, while we're just talking about, you know, like little pearls of wisdom to people who are writing Dark Muppet movies, no one needs to say the title of the movie three times in the actual movie. Thank you. Happy Time Murders. Happy Time Murders. The Happy Time Murders. Okay. Now that I think we've cleared puppets, it's possible we might bring in a show basically on time this week. Neil, what are we doing next week?
Oh, well, we've got a fun adventure planned next week. We are going to be looking back at the entire summer. We're doing the summertime mailbag to sort of close things out. So send us your questions about summer movies, summer TV, any unanswered questions you've had from the pop culture of the last 3-ish months or however long summer's supposed to last. I live in Texas. Summer's just pretty much all the time. So send that stuff in. You can tweet at us at Storm of Spoilers. You can email us stormofspoilers@gmail.com. And if you're in the Slack, you can hit us in the hashtag mailbag.
Oh, yeah. You could be like, Joanna, who is the boy in Castle Rock? Dave, what is Avengers 4 called? Neil, how do I make awesome dumplings in my life? You could ask all those things at the summertime.
I like that mine's food related. I'm into that.
Well, I had like a TV and a movie one, and, you know, like, we're all into food. So who knows?
A dumpling. Who doesn't love a dumpling?
Oh, we could talk about Bao again. Dumplings. We could talk about Bao again.
Oh, I ate a Bao.
Have you seen the Bao Funko that basically just looks like the little Bao?
No.
Oh my God, I might have to buy that. I'm not even into Funkos. All right. So that's it for this week. Until next week, summertime mailbag, where can people find more of your work online? Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. You can hear me chatting away about all kinds of stuff over on the podcast Little Gold Men.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
You get me over on the newly redesigned Fresh Coat of Paint, filmschoolrejects.com. That explains why I haven't been sleeping over the last 6 to 8 weeks. You can also catch me on the Twitter at Rejects. It also explains why I haven't been tweeting very much. So now that new Film School Rejects is up, lots of content coming from me. So hopefully we'll see.
Constant stream of Neil coming up. I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find my other podcast, Fighting in the War Room, at fightinginthewarroom.com. You can find all of us at stormspoilers.com. And of course, email us or tweet us your questions at Storm of Spoilers on Twitter, stormspoilers@gmail.com. Join the Patreon at patreon.com/stormspoilers. And if there's one thing I could pass on to you, even if you don't like our show, it's that I really hope for your health, you do not fall down.
I reflect on my reflection, and I ask myself the question, what's the right direction to go? I don't know. Am I a man or am I a Muppet?
Am I a Muppet?
If I'm a Muppet, then I'm a very manly Muppet.
Very manly Muppet.
Am I a Muppet? Or am I a man?
Am I a man?
If I'm a man.